The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long.
Welcome back, folks, to the Rebel and the Renegade Roundtable. And we are today on the last weekend of Confederate History Month. We're taking and kind of dissecting a sermon that was delivered at the reinterment of a group of bodies of South Carolina Confederate men who died at Gettysburg, who were the ladies in South Carolina collected money. They got contributions. They did everything within their power to go to Gettysburg and to disinter these men from South Carolina, who had just in many cases been left in mass graves. But they were brought back to their home state so that they could rest in the soil of the state that they sought to defend. And so I'm going to jump back into this. Hopefully we'll get this thing finished up, Stephen, before our time runs out. But it says, the fire on the one altar so readily communicates itself to the smoldering ashes on the other that it is evident that as long as one is enjoyed, the other cannot be completely quenched. Their principles are akin, and the existence of one necessarily conduces to the maintenance of the other. Consequently, that a people should be thoroughly subdued, neither can be left intact. Both must be crushed. The people, therefore, which deliberately consents to the destruction of one form of liberty, vainly dreams when it hopes that the other may escape. As surely as the law of contagion operates, so surely will one not long survive the contact with the corpse of another. To this conclusion, then, must those come who abandon the last struggle for civil liberty. They must expect, as a legitimate inference, the loss of the religious liberty. To sum up what has been said, our brethren will not have died in vain if we, their survivors, adhere to the great principles for which they contended unto their death. If we preserve an attitude of protest against those radical influences which threaten to sweep away every vestige of what we call constitutional rights and guarantees, to pollute the fountains of social life, and ultimately to whelm our civil and religious liberties into one common ruin. Can this attitude be maintained? I presume not, to speak of special political measures, but would earnestly urge the adoption of a course which will enable us to retain our hold upon our principles and keep a posture of preparation for any relief which a gracious providence may be pleased in answer to our prayers to grant us from these evils which now oppress us. Let us cling to our identity as a Southern people. The danger is upon us of losing it, of its being absorbed and swallowed up in that of a people which, having despoiled us of the rights of free men, assumes to do our thinking, our legislating, and our ruling for us. Influences are operating on us with every last breath we draw, which, if we be not vigilant, will sooner or later wipe out every distinctive characteristic which has hitherto marked us. Are we prepared for it? In that event, nothing of the past will be left to the South but a history which will read like a poem. Nothing for the present but a place on the maps which our children study. Nothing for the future but a single element of existence, a geographical one. But can we preserve our identity in the face of the difficulties which oppose it? Now, guys, I'm breaking from the reading here to just stop and think about the destruction of our Confederate memorials, our Confederate music, our Confederate flags, everything. And if you understand that, then you will understand the principles of the Marxism, which the great Reverend Girardeau mentions here. Now to continue. We may do it by continuing to wear the badges of mourning befitting a deeply afflicted people, by consenting to undergo the trials which distinguish us from a people inflated with material prosperity, rather than to abate one jot or tittle of our adhesion to principle, and by transforming the sufferings endured for freedom's sake into a discipline which may save our virtues from decay and our liberties from extinction. We may do it by utterly refusing to participate in any measures of however great apparent utility which require the slightest compromise of our innermost convictions. Think voting, people. That's exactly what you're doing. He didn't say that. I did. By declining to acquiesce where only to submit is demanded of us, and by preserving a dignified silence by which we shall signify our resolution. If we may not act for truth, rightfulness, and liberty, not to act at all. We may do it by insinuating peculiar customs and organizations which should discharge the office of monuments, perpetuating the past. Wow, he mentioned the monuments. By forming associations of a memorial character, like that whose call gathers us here today. By collecting and publishing materials for our own history, and by appointing anniversaries by which, if we may not celebrate the attainment of independence, we can at least commemorate the deeds of men who died for our fundamental liberties and our fundamental rights. Oh, damn, Stephen, that one hits me pretty hard. We may do it by scrupulously... Go ahead, buddy.
I was going to say, and in 1871, this Reverend Girardeau was saying all of this right into the face of a hostile military occupational government, too. I was keeping that in mind. Please, go ahead, sir.
All right, buddy. We may do it by scrupulously adhering to the phraseology of the past, by making it the vehicle for transmitting to our posterity ideas which once true are true forever. All opposition to them by brute force to the contrary notwithstanding. We may do it by the education we impart to the young, by making our nursery schools and colleges channels for conveying from generation to generation our own type of thought, sentiment, and opinion, by stamping on the minds of our children principles hallowed by the blood of patriots. Oh gosh, we don't do that now. We turn them over to the public fool system. Pardon me, now back to the text. And by leading them with uncovered heads to gaze upon the grandest monuments of the South to liberty, the headstones which mark the last resting place of our valiant Southern volunteers. If we adopt not this course, what will be the consequences which will ensue? One of the results will be that the only remaining representatives on this continent of free Republican principles, especially in their federative form, will have ceased to exist. And the faintest, the last hope of a return to the noble, the glorious estate inherited from our patriotic ancestors will have gone out in the blackness of darkness. And then it must in all probability follow that the question of the possibility of Republican institutions or of the maintenance of the principle of free representation will have been negative forever. The failure of the experiment on this continent instituted under conditions so favorable, under auspices so happy, will discourage any similar attempt for the future in any country under heaven. It may without extravagance be said that we occupy a moral Thermopylae in the struggle for Republican liberty And if we go down, it will be buried in the same grave with us. Another consequence of our refusal to take this course will be, and it deserves our solemn consideration, that our deliberate acquiescence in the criminal acts by which the liberties of the country are subverted will make us partakers in the punishment which must someday be visited on their perpetrators. It implies no ordinary crime to break the faith of compacts between people and people, to despoil the sovereign states of the rights won by sacrifice and independence, which was purchased by blood, to disturb the balances of equitable government, and to threaten with ruin as fair a fabric of constitutional liberty as the sun ever shone upon. The offense is rank, and it smells to heaven. And if nations are punished for their sins in this world, the penalty of such acts must soon or later descend. It matters little that its approach is delayed or is noiselessly made. It was a saying of the ancients that the feet of the avenging deity are shod with wool. The tread of the pursuing nemesis may not be heard, but it presses with the inevitable and the tremendous certainty upon the track of national transgression. The demon of radicalism has been invoked. It knows no law and may yet turn upon those who have imagined it obedient to their will. And shall we select to participate in these retributions? No, my countrymen. Let us prefer to suffer present affliction for righteousness' sake, rather than to incur the future punishments of a national guilt. Let us keep our skirts clear. We can only do this by maintaining our identity as a people. And is this impossible? There is a race which, coming down through the centuries, enveloped with antagonistic influences and hostile nationalities, has stood out in perpetual protest against amalgamation with other peoples, and today preserves its characteristics as the current of the great Western River flows into, without blending with, the multitudinous waters of the Gulf. Even so, we must hold to our identity, where as a people, we are undone. Think about that, people. If we give up our identity as Southerners, we're done. We may perish if we attempt it. Perish we must as a Southern race if we do not. It is now almost the only hope that is left to us. Conservation of our peculiar principles is our great, our paramount duty. We owe it to our forefathers. We owe it to these, our dead brethren. We owe it to ourselves. And most of all, we owe it to our children. We owe it to the struggling, waning, almost expiring sense of liberty in this land. If we yield in this extremity, all is lost. If we tenaciously hold on to the fragments of our noble past, cling to the planks of a shipwrecked constitution, the very attitude we shall maintain may peaceably inspire other lovers of liberty in this land to rally to a last mighty effort to regain the lost ground, or at least to arrest further strides to ruin, as the firm stand on a color bearer in the crisis of battle and danger of rout sometimes recalls a discomfited and retiring host. It is thought by some that there is a speck of hope, a gleam of light in this stormy horizon. The disregard of the limitations of the federal constitution by these Marxists, the disposition to make fresh inroads upon the provisions of that instrument, the seeming determination to be balked by no barriers of fundamental law in its march to permanent triumph. These features disclosed by the dominant party are awakening thought and exciting apprehension. It may please a peaceful providence by this means to restore to the people of this land some measure of respect for the guarantees of liberty which we enjoyed in the past. If so, it would be suicidal in us by any unfortunate concessions to relinquish the position we have held. Whether this be so or not, we must stand by our principles. When the great Stonewall Jackson had, on that fearful night at Chancellorsville, received his fatal wound, and the ground was swept by a storm of grapeshot, he was informed by an officer that it was thought necessary to retire. Faint from the loss of blood and suffering from excruciating pain, Jackson partly raised himself from his prostrate posture and in a tone of authority said, "Hold your ground, sir." The bleeding form of liberty rises from the earth before us and utters this same command. We must, by God's help, hold our ground or consent to the traitors to our ancestry, our dead, our trust for posterity to our firesides, our social order, and our civil and religious liberties. Barring a certain fearful looking for a retribution, which would be the end of such a policy, no doubt we might better our material condition by accommodating our principles to the demands of circumstances. But shall we come to that? Who of us holds principles so cheap as to prefer to her his gold, his house, and his lands? Who of us will put her into the market and barter her for so many pieces of silver? Who of us, gazing into these open graves and upon these coffins, will measure her value by life itself? These men love not their lives in comparison with her. They died for her. Who will cleave to material goods on sensual ease at the sacrifice or principle? Were there one here who would answer in the affirmative, every moldering bone in these narrow houses would find a tongue of rebuke for him. Better, far better would it be to gain a bare subsistence with our principles retained than to revel in luxury with the consciousness of treachery in our souls and the welcome collar of servitude around our necks. Rather than surrender character, better would it be in the last extremity to leave a soil on which it would be no longer possible for free men to live, to take with us all that would remain of a historic South Carolina, and to seek in some happier clime liberty to enjoy a few natural rights without being menaced by those who were our equals for not acquiescing in the tyranny of those who were our inferiors. This was the issue to which Carolina's great statesman declared in the Senate of the United States it would come in case force measures should succeed when employed against a southern state. But whither should we go from the relentless, all-pervading spirit of radicalism? Could we ascend into heaven? It would not be there. But should we take our beds in hell? Behold, it will be there. If we should take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there would not its hands pursue us and its right hand hold us. If we should say, surely the darkness will cover us, would not the night be made light about us by its incendiary conflagrations? Whither should we turn? Where on earth could the last asylum of the oppressed be found? Merciful God, we lift our appeal to Thee. Thou hast been our dwelling place in all generations. Cover us with thy feathers, and let our trust be in the shadow of thy wings. But enough. The mournful office which has summoned us hither awaits to be performed. Let us hasten to remove these relics of unconquered patriots from a strange atmosphere less free than the air of the sepulcher. And if we have abandoned the last hope of maintaining their principles, if we are prepared to give up everything for which these men died, let us discharge this office for them with the feelings of those who are interring their principles with their bones. Of those who are solemnizing the funeral rites and burying the corpse, of liberty. Let us place no emblem of hope above their heads. But having in the silence of death struck the last stroke of the spade upon their graves, retire from the scene as men withdraw from a field on which all has been lost. But if it be our determination that we will cease to cherish the sacred principles which these men consecrated with their blood, only when we cease to live, then let us, comrades, fellow citizens, lovers of liberty, with reverent mind and tender hands, consign all that remains of our brethren to their coveted resting place in the bosom of their beloved South Carolina. And as we cover them for their last sleep, let us bury with the very proposal to us to apostatize from their principles every tendency even to compromise them, every desire to recover position, wealth, or ease at the sacrifice of our honor, our virtue, and our truth. Let us lay them down in hope. And as each modest stone rears its head above them, inscribe upon it, Resurgam, the token of our faith, that their principles now trodden into dust will someday rise again, the symbol of our invincible resolution that these men shall not have died in vain. Heroes of Gettysburg, champions of constitutional rights, martyrs for regulated liberty, once again, farewell. Descend to your final sleep with a people's benedictions upon your names. Rest ye here, soldiers of a defeated. God grant it may not be a wholly lost cause. We may not fire a soldier's salute over your dust, but the pulses of our heart beat like muffled drums, and every deep drawn sigh breathes a low and a passionate requiem. Memory will keep her guard of honor over your graves. Love will bedew them with her tears. Faith will draw them from her inspiration for future sacrifices. And hope, kindling her torch at the fires which glow in your ashes, will in its light look forward to a day when a people once more redeemed and enfranchised will confess publicly that your death was not in vain. Well, Stephen, that ends it. Your thoughts, buddy?
I just was thinking of how this is 1871, and that man who was given that sermon, he'd been living under the boot of the military occupation for 5 years, and I didn't realize how much worse it was here during that period of time than it was, say, in Europe after World War II, that, you know, the technology had advanced enough to where things were, relief was at least able to get there. But here, man, it was years of real hard times in the South, and it was another 5 years before they finally got that. And is it right to say they finally threw off that boot, the military occupation, or did it just move on in 1876? You'd be the one to answer that question. But this was like right in the middle of those two, you know, from the end of the war to finally they leave. It's just right halfway between here when he was given this sermon. And then they took the time and put out the effort and the expense to go and collect their dead and give them honorable Christian burial in Charleston, South. You said it was Charleston, right, sir? Magnolia,
yes,
Park.
Sir. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Well, Stephen, as you know, because I noticed you commented on it, I put on social media today, I said that we need to change the name of this war and not from, you know, even from our Second War for Independence. I still think we should call this the Southern States War to prevent the spread of Marxist socialism in their country. Now, believe it or not, and you may have seen this, I had some people come back, well, don't put it that way, you know. Gosh, the people are never going to understand what you're saying, you know, and they're not going to believe the Republican Party was started by Marxists. And, you know, let's do it easier. Well, folks, we've been doing it easier for 160 years, and it hadn't worked.
No, the truth is what it is. It's, you know, once I realize how it was, it's kind of freeing. It takes a little, the truth sets you free, but it makes you very uncomfortable first, and then it really ticks you off. But then once you, well, okay, that's just the way it was. I've been lied to about many things, most everything during my life. I found out my dad was right after all. That I hope he's happy now.
Well, he knows for sure that you have been able, Stephen, to find the truth, because you are a pursuer of truth. And unfortunately, Stephen, you and I both know that the pursuers of truth in this country are in a very small minority. But folks, you're about to get smacked full in the mouth with this socialist government that has been building since 1860. You are going to succumb to it. I mean, look at everything that is said. Almost everything today, every law that emanates out of a state or even the federal government is totally in opposition to the Constitution. As weak as it was, they ignore it. And we're headed for some really tough times here, Stephen. I know that you see it. You and I have talked about it.
Yeah, we're just getting run over. We're getting run over by both boots now. They just keep running us into the ground. There's no getting away from it when they're coming at you with both barrels. It's just bringing all these. We're bombing all these people around the world. To the point that they hate us. They laugh at us because of the, you know, stealing the election right in front of you, and we keep voting like going after that carrot. It ain't gonna work. And most of the world can see how we are bamboozled to the point we're beyond the worst banana republic. So many people are still just die hard that they're going to find the right person. No, it ain't going to happen. I mean, and at the same time, inviting all these people who feel that way about us, who we've been dropping bombs on for 20 years at least, to come here and live off of us and hate us. Just that is not going to end well. It's just ignorant. Our quote unquote government that's supposed to be representing us is making war on us just as surely as the Reconstructive government in 1871 was on this man.
Very well
stated, anyway.
Very well stated, my friend. You're spot on, and I know we're getting close to the break here. And I did just tell the producer that we would accept phone calls in the last 30 minutes. So, but this, I just can't understand, Stephen. I can understand why they're trying to suppress this sermon.
Yes,
because when we go back to a man of God in 1871, who in the very first part of his speech said, "I don't want this to be political." And, you know, and I understand why he said that, because it wasn't political. What he's saying is about the rights of people, and the rights of people are disappearing faster than a snowball in Tucson, Arizona on July the 4th. It's just absolutely incredible the way this is happening. But, Stephen, I'm also perplexed by even the people who claim to be on our side, who come up with these stupid things like, well, let's not tell the people it was actually Marxist, because if we do that, they're dumbasses and they won't understand. Well, here comes the music. See you on the other side, folks.
All right. All right, sir.
From Nazareth he came. Ragtag band to bring a revolution. Some would make him king, others couldn't stand for that. The cross was a solution, but he rose again. Wise men follow him, but he rose again. Wise men follow him. Thank God for the renegades.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read one. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered from a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious, he almost died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives that were more affordable, he tried Extendivite. Since taking it, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our 5th bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats. And even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
Stephen, we've got a caller. Are you ready to listen to this gentleman?
Sure. Thanks.
All that right.
Works. Yes, sir.
All right. Ken in Texas. Ken, how are you this evening, sir?
Oh, good evening, fellow thought criminals. Well, I have to congratulate you on being not only political thought criminals, but theological thought criminals as well. So I congratulate you on that.
Thank you. I was thinking the same thing about this gentleman that made this sermon, too, that he was quite a thought criminal for his time, too, to be doing that right in the midst of the occupation. But thank you for saying that, sir. Please go ahead.
Yeah, with the lead still flying, that takes big kahunas. Do you know what his theological persuasion was? Was he like Presbyterian or Baptist or?
You know, I have read that recently, Ken, but I must confess that I do not remember correctly. My mind keeps reverting to Presbyterian, but don't hold me to that, please.
Well, he sure sounds like a Presbyterian. Well, I mean, when
yes,
Presbyterians were actually Presbyterians.
Yes.
Not the funny stuff these days. Well, for all those other thought criminals out there that may have forgotten, or I'm sure you all already know, in this month of April in 1862, Texas seceded from the Union.
Oh, yes.
And I was kind of surprised the first time I read that, which embarrassingly was not too long ago. You know, I think about Patrick Henry when he said, you know, give me liberty or give me death. I really think he was talking about, you know, I want to believe what I want to believe, and don't tell me what to believe. I'll worship God as I choose.
Exactly. And Ken, if I may, let's not forget that Patrick Henry predicted the Civil War, and he said at the Virginia Ratification Convention, folks, if we sign this, if we ratify this Constitution, the states are committing suicide.
Yeah, that's what got me thinking along those lines. And I meant to try to call in right when you said that, but that was like a week or so or two ago. And but yeah, that's what inspired that thinking. So it's really amazing. And then I figured, all right, I want to say that tonight. And so I chimed in, and when you were reading, I just was blown away that that's what was being said. So it was very humbling. But thank you all very much.
Sure, Ken. Let me throw you another Patrick Henry, if I may. Are you ready? You got
sure.
Your catcher's mitt on here?
You're a Henry repeater.
Okay. Here comes something else that Patrick Henry said, you know, that I think that most people have even forgotten about. He said, at the Virginia ratification again, he said, we people of the South, if we ratify this Constitution, we will be governed by people who do not have our same interest.
Yes, and there's a lot I'd like to say regarding that, but you know, I don't want to monopolize all the airtime, but it's such an important issue. I mean, it's the core issue. And oh my goodness. Thank you all very much. I'm sure other people want to chime
in,
but
thank you. We appreciate
it's very comforting to know that I have fellow thought criminals. All right. Good night.
All right. Thank you, Ken. Take care, buddy. Your thoughts, Stephen?
Yeah, I had been thinking that same thing about the man, the Reverend Gerardo, that, yeah, he qualified definitely as a thought criminal. And it was, I'm amazed at the echo of the times today as to what he was going through back then, too. It's very, very eerie that we're living in the same kind of turning, I guess is one way to put it. You know, they call this the fourth turning sometimes. I think they were going through one back then, too. Very similar to what we have going on right now.
Well, just as a kind of a thought-provoking point here, Stephen, what ability that the Reverend Gerardo had, what do you think? Was it education, divine inspiration? What was it that made him see through this fiasco and to know that if the North continued to prevail, you know, that the liberty was dead. So
I don't know how he saw it. Definitely looked that way. I mean, like, the more things were industrialized and everything, the foundation of what was here was eaten away from the outside a lot more than us expanding outward. It seems like what we had here was eroded and corroded from within. It's just a complete change in the perspective I have of the way history went now. That still to this day, it shocks me some. I mean, the last couple of years, I have had a few profound revelations about my history and my ancestry too, and what happened here. You know, just I had never looked at them quite the same way before, and it just seems that if we're still under the boot of the same empire right now, I get shocked by it still sometimes.
No. I couldn't agree more. And, Stephen, I will do it. I would like to ask you to go first. But just if you could explain to those who are listening exactly what this Southern heritage means to you.
Well, I had ancestors that fought in that war, and they were just like living here and were invaded upon. You know, and then to have it, I have an answer to that question. What I had not seen before this Confederate History Month was they've changed the name of the bases now. I've seen them come out. I started to say they came after our monuments, but they'd already done that a few years ago. But now they're literally changing the names of the military bases and stuff right in our face kind of thing. That has not happened before. And it's like, unless it's your house, you won't understand it, you know, kind of thing, unless it happens to you, because a lot of people have another perspective on this whole thing. They just think that the quote-unquote Civil War was something that happened a long time ago, and why are you talking about that now, and who cares, what does it matter? And I can see that my dad was right, for one thing, like I had said earlier, and it's almost like the blood in my veins has something to do with the people whose blood was spilled there and that they brought back here from Gettysburg. At Gettysburg was 62, I think, wasn't it, sir? Was it, or was it 63? 63, right? February 4th, week of 63, if I remember right. Is that right, sir? 63, yeah. And is that right, or did I get that right? I mean, you know, I got to make sure I don't misspeak. I mentioned that earthquake in Charleston a while ago, and it was 86. It was 10 years afterwards, they left.
Yeah, July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of 1863.
Okay, so it had been a couple of years after we'd been invaded, and they'd answered, some of them barefoot, and and just coming to try to defend their homes. And that's a whole different perspective. They portray it as this civil war between two opposing factions and stuff, when they invaded, like you said, the border states. The first three were just border states, and then sent this rampaging Marxist pillaging army to do the first Bolshevik revolution down here back then. And that's how I see it now, and I'd never really looked at it quite that way before, but it makes more and more sense to me in like that now. It does. I think that's the way it really was, that we need to look at it from that perspective. I was thinking of how this corrosion, so to speak, or the whittling away of those three institutions that he described, the state, the family, and the church, was done, and it came in with the town and the railroad and the telegraph and stuff. It was happening a little at a time, and it's a whole different way to look at things, because there was something stable here before. People lived on the farm. They had, you know, they had a, I don't know why I hate to use that word, you know, I don't want to trip, but they had a society and a civilization that had endured, and it was being changed, transformed, and all of these things they look at as this progress, but some of the things, you know, they progressed towards decay, you know. The decay progressed is what happened a lot of times, instead of us making technological progress. And it's a moral decay, too. I think he pointed that out very well. And that's something that, that I can see happened now in my own time. And he'd seen the same thing. It's funny how history echoes, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're right. So, yes, Stephen, beyond a shadow of a doubt, as I look at this, and, you know, here's, and I know other people don't look at it this way, and one of the things I have found recently is how many members of the Sons of Confederate Veterans support the Orange Messiah, Donald Trump. Now, the one thing that I asked myself all the way back in 2016 is how in the world would I ever explain to my Confederate ancestors who gave the, some of whom gave the ultimate sacrifice on the field of battle, how could I ever explain to them that I would support a man who said that being nominated to the party of the party of Lincoln was the greatest honor in his life, and he couldn't wait to bring back the legacy of Abraham Lincoln to the party and to the country? Stephen, can you even imagine sitting and trying to explain to one of our ancestors, you know, some of mine died at Gettysburg, some died in other places, I can't even imagine what it would have been like to have sat down across from them and tried to explain to them why I would vote for a man who said that. Your thoughts?
Most people are ignorant about the true history. And you know, I have been, if not completely ignorant, at least misinformed about some of it, too.
So, well, Stephen, if we've ever darkened the door of a public school, we have been indoctrinated. I mean, it should be just really simple for us to understand that.
And popular culture and the films. I mean, the Gone with the Wind was how I first learned about the Civil War, and they had the burning of Atlanta in there. I mean, there was some things part in there that gave a little semblance hint at the truth. But it's just Hollywood has taught so many people history on top of the public school system.
Oh yeah, big time. And you know, it bothers me probably more than anything else. I can understand Yankees and their hypocrisy, but I have a real problem trying to understand those who claim a Southern heritage and embracing such hypocrisy. I guess nothing probably bothers me much more than that. Your thought?
Yeah, I don't ever plan on pledging allegiance to that flag again. It just, and I wear St. Andrew wherever I go now, pretty much. I just, I realized what the truth was, and people, I can understand some people thinking that, okay, my father fought under that flag and thing, you know, since then the Southern males have gone and fought and died for that banner. Okay. They have. That's a sad fact. And I don't see why anyone would do it now. I was thinking about one that died in boot camp when you mentioned what had I seen.
Oh, sure.
That I hadn't seen, and they changed the name of the fort, you know, in the meantime. That's kind of how that came up. And no, another hard thing to explain to our ancestors, how so many of our people after the war went and fought for the other side, its army. Now, when a conquered people fighting on the other side. That's how I realized that was going on here growing up, but I did not realize how far back it went and how deep this thing was with the Constitution and the Empire just coming in. Like I've said it again, like the 1848, the Marxists came over to the U.S. They subverted us until they got to the point they were able to have the first communist Marxist revolution in the South, and then call it the Civil War as they re-educated us to call it that. I'm sure that it looked like just what it was at the time, an invading army coming in, raping and pillaging your home. And we responded in kind to that event, and then have been the generation since have been psyoped into a different point of view, which, but that's what happened. And it's still with, I'll get shocked when I go back, try to put myself in that their place, so to speak, in a way, and just realize, oh, wow, that's what happened. And this is the echo of it now, 2024. The same kind of thing is happening again. The same powers that should not be are orchestrating this one, too.
Well, Stephen, I fully understand, and you mentioned it, and I had a really good discussion with the commander of the Turner Ashby Sons of Confederate Veterans. We had a very detailed talk the other day, a little over an hour, I think, total. And I was so proud of him because he said that he had gone before the Sons of Confederate Veterans where he was a commander. And he said, look, if you folks want me to step down, I will step down if that's what you want. But I can no longer, in good conscience, ever pledge allegiance to that flag or salute it. I can't do it. So if you think I'm going to be doing that as your post commander or your camp commander, I can't do it. Well, I was proud that he told me that they voted for him to stay in, even with that provision. But, you know, Stephen, we look at these things and we say, well, you know, great so-and-so fought under, in World War One, or my grandfather fought in World War Two, or my brother fought in Korea, or my uncle fought in Korea, my friends fought in Vietnam. Stephen,
yes.
Are any of those, when we look at those, even our declared wars, which were declared constitutionally, was our government not just like Abraham Lincoln? Was our government not still controlled by Marxists?
Yeah, absolutely. Every one of them. All the way back to Teddy Roosevelt and the Manhattan Club back in 1903 or before 1898, I think, was back then. And then they that first Remember the Maine and all that, all these false flags. It's a long it's a family tradition over here, ain't it? It's just, geez. And it's been happening a long time. I hate to see it being repeated. And I really hate to see Southern men go and join this military and fight and die for somebody else now. I think they've about had enough of that. And it's reflected in the recruiting numbers, you know. That's a good sign. And the fact that on the okay, I know that there's part of the protests and stuff that's the rent-a-ruckus part of it, and some of it looks a little orchestrated, some of it, but it's like there are people there who don't know what they're talking about, but there are a lot of people there that do and have had enough of them just burning up the babies. What, 35,000 people in Gaza, you know, that's a good sign. There's some good things happening people are waking up to, you know. I don't want to be all gloom and doom that nobody remembers this, because, you know, there's hope, I guess, that people are going to wake up to all of this, and maybe they won't vote this November. And still, you're talking about that orange man. It's like, what if they gave an election and nobody came? That's kind of like I heard somebody say that about a war once. If they gave a war and nobody came, is the way it was put once too, and kind of both of them lead to the same thing, I guess. Just
yeah. I think that's true. But you know, how can any people? And this is what really troubles me about America today: is the absolute abject hypocrisy. We had Madeleine Albright say that she didn't think the deaths of 500,000 Iraqis because of our blockade and the old and the children were dying, lack of medicine, lack of medical care, other stuff, and we had a blockade to prevent anything from going there. And then on national television, she said, well, I think it was worth it. Now, how in the world can we ever criticize anybody in anywhere for, you know, the deaths in a war or what have you? How can we criticize anybody when we've done that ourselves and Then to jump to Barbara Bush when asked about why that the men who the bodies of the men who were killed in Iraq were not being, you know, attended to as most people thought they should. And the first thing out of her mouth was, well, we can't trouble our beautiful minds over such things. Folks, if that doesn't tell you who's running the government, I don't know what is. Go ahead, Stephen.
Their beautiful minds.
Yep.
Oh, gosh. Well, they may think they have beautiful minds, but they have some pretty rotten souls. I got to tell you, it just boggles my mind. It just, but like I said, I hope that enough people are starting to see through their charade now. You know, wage peace by means of the truth. That's what you're doing. That's what I'm doing. And a lot of people are starting. I hope that we're going out to you. You had mentioned that it, perhaps the stream is not completely down because we got Ken to call. But there some people I have gotten texts that said they were having trouble listening live. Yep. So I hope you all get this on the archive if you didn't catch us live. And I'll be checking out to see if Robert Ravold is able to come on next. I don't know what's up with that. I just hope that resolves. You guys support RBN, please. I really appreciate the listening audience. The RBN's like family to me, and I've learned a lot from them, and I'm proud to be associated with them. And there's the music coming in.
Well, all right, buddy. We're out of here. Thank you, folks, for tuning in to the Rebel and the Renegade Roundtable. And God bless you all. Have a wonderful week, and we shall see you next week. Thank you, Stephen.
Thanks, Mike. Talk with you soon.
Gonna wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop and lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop and lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.